military has accomplished miracles in its ability to keep people alive on the battlefields of Iraq and Afghanistan. The survival rate in these wars exceeds anything in the history of warfare. But the delivery of mental health care services to the people who survive, even the people seemingly unscathed physically, has been, by the military's own admission, woefully inadequate and well short of anything miraculous. Suicide rates for veterans, incidents of PTSD and substance abuse are well above expected levels. A story out of member station KUOW Seattle now indicates that lack of proper mental health care screening keeps hidden other disorders that could be expected in high-stress command environments. The Armed Forces Health Surveillance Center says over 3,500 service members were diagnosed with some kind of eating disorder, typically anorexia or bulimia, over a 10-year period ending in 2013. At the end of 2015, the Army put out a major Health of the Force report that talked about soldiers not being physically fit to deploy, but there was no mention of eating disorders. Patricia Murphy, military and veterans reporter for member station KUOW in Seattle, spoke with Marine Lieutenant Teresa Larson about how she was left on her own to struggle with bulimia. Murphy says there's almost no way to know who is silently battling life-threatening eating disorders at the very same moment they may be facing enemies on the battlefield.
A lot of these disordered eating behaviors, like fasting or over-exercising or using laxatives, can really exist at a very low level in a soldier or a service member's life for quite some time before it may become out of control.
Yet I was struck by how in Teresa Larson's story, this eating disorder is really entwined into her sense of achievement within the military. Listen.
I didn't want to show weakness. So, and to me, weakness was admitting I needed help, not knowing something, not being as fast as everyone. So I made sure I was in great shape, that I stuck up for my Marines, took care of them, kind of forgot about myself.
So the pressure rises as service goes on. But as the moment of deployment approached, things began to unravel a little bit. Explain how she told you about that.
Teresa Larson had always engaged in restrictive eating behaviors. It was part of who she was. When she started to vomit her food, when she started to exhibit bulimic behaviors, she immediately felt a sense of relief. This was a way for her to control things in her life when a lot of things she felt were out of her control.
You immediately feel relief, like, okay, thank God that's done. But then you're like, crap, what did I just do? And then the depression sits in. So the depression just kind of sinks you deeper and deeper into the hole. But you keep doing it because it's like it becomes very addictive. It's an addictive behavior. So it's like you almost get high off of the throwing up.
In that very act of sort of that intensity of the addictive behavior, she's also able to keep everyone thinking that she's performing just fine.
I convinced everyone around me, like, I'd be fine. When I deploy, obviously, it's going to go away because I'm going to be super busy and I'm going to be working all the time and I have other people to take care of, which I'm really good at. So I deployed and that's kind of where things started to unravel little by little.
Absolutely, things started to unravel for her because before women were recognized in combat, Teresa Larson was doing some very difficult work in Iraq. Because she was a lieutenant, she was not living with her troops. And this sense of isolation while she was deployed really started to contribute to these behaviors and this problem within herself in general. She was able to hide a lot more easily, right? You know, she was not necessarily always around her troops or her Marines. And one of the things that's so difficult about having an eating disorder is you have to make peace with food, with something you need to live. And that's extremely difficult to do, not only in a war zone, but without any real mental health assistance, with some very specialized treatment, especially when it gets to this point.
You talked to some medical professionals here, and we're going to hear from one in a moment. I'm curious as to how the actual military lifestyle in an unintentional way enables these kinds of behaviors and maybe sustains them in a way that wouldn't be the case in the civilian world.
Absolutely. You know, the military creates the perfect storm of risk factors for an eating disorder. You have exposure to combat stress, intense pressure to perform, strict weight limits, and beyond that, very little dialogue or outlet to express vulnerability or problems you may be having.
It's really sad when you listen to Dr. Neeru Bakshi, who's a medical director at the Eating Recovery Center in Bellevue, Washington. And that's an outpatient and residential care facility that's part of your story. Just how wrapped up in these behaviors these patients get. Listen.
They will actually use their eating disorders to support what they need for those physical requirements. We'll have vets that come to us saying, well, prior to my needing to meet X and Y and Z for my physical requirements test, what I did was I was in the gym 6 hours a day. And that's actually a form of their eating disorder.
How do you break something like that?
It's very difficult, and especially in cases like this, because it works for them, right? They meet their physical requirements. These behaviors in and of themselves at a low level don't seem very problematic. It's only when they begin to spiral and turn into something bigger than you, it creates its own narrative in your life. And we spoke to an Army psychologist who is interested in eating disorders and runs an eating disorder group at Madigan Army Medical Center here in Washington State. She has 10 people in that group. Some of them have maintained their eating disorders for 20 plus years.
Eating disorders in the military. Patricia Murphy, military and veterans reporter for member station KUOW in Seattle. Patricia, thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.